Now it's time to be educated and entertained by the country's most famous environmental scientist, Joey B. has researched grizzly bears, wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B. Outdoor Science and Nature. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Well, this show, I'm going to say, is about fishing, but when our guest here today starts to speak, you're going to see that what he's got to talk about is fishing, but it's in his beautiful area of the country. So the first thing is, Coach Bill Gorski, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Joey. Be glad to be here. This is an honor for me. I'm excited.
Well, you know what, Coach? I know that you are the Cape Cod fisherman. You just absolutely love to be there, and that's what the show is all about. And you've got your top five ranking from five through one being the best. So let's get rolling today, Coach. What do you have?
Well, here's what I have. I have done the impossible and come up with five, because you could have said 55. That would have been a lot easier, because this Cape Cod is just loaded with places to fish, both fresh and salt. So maybe you could have made it 110. In any case, the common characteristic for all these places is an easy access to launch the kayak, and it's all kayak fishing, unless you want to get out and wade, and the fact that there are varieties of fish and there are big fish. So you got to love all of those factors. So my first choice, counting down, by the way, you've been there, Cedar Pond in Orleans, which is a terrific white perch destination. White perch is one of the great species in terms of size. You can fish with a freshwater ultralight. They are in the striped bass family. They will fight you like a strong safety on a football field. And there are tons of them, and they're big. So you got to love that place. And it's secluded, very, very underfished, and you can use a variety of lures. So it just pans out to be a terrific place to go. And you've been there, so you can attest to that.
Well, you know what, Coach? We filmed the Joey B episode there, of which you outfished me by quite a bit.
I didn't want to bring that up.
Yeah, you can, Coach. It's okay, because most times you will outfish me.
Yeah, it was a butt kick, by the way.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely was. But you know what's really neat, Coach? And you know this, with the white perch, there's a couple species that when they hit your fishing line, it's like they've never eaten before in the history of the world. And when you have an ultralight out there, and I did have an ultralight on that day, it was like, what? It was just crazy to catch those fish.
And you know what? I'll tell you what else, too. If you talk to white perch fishermen, some of them will tell you they're the stupidest fish in the world because you can catch them one after another. And then on another day, they'll think they're the smartest fish in the world because they're just, you know, thumbing their fins at you. So, you know, they're great, great competitors, as it were, as a species, and great fun, and they're good in the pan.
Well, you know what's really neat? I'm going back to that day that you kicked my tail in. We had fished for a bit with only a fish here, a fish there, and with the wind blowing hard into the one corner, and you were smart enough to get down there, and we just know as the food chain goes, as microorganisms get blown down, then all of a sudden fish that feed on them and so on. And that's where the white perch was. And then that was like a white perch fish catching, like magnet haven, whatever you want to call it.
Well, there was, if you remember, there was a culvert that was the inflow for the pond. And it's a brackish pond, you know, part salt, part fresh. And that current tended to hold the fish in that area. And we pretty much camped out there and kicked butt all day.
And with brackish water, which is low salinity content, there are not many fish that have the ability of living in both fresh and salt, or, you know, the meeting of the two of them, brackish water.
And they can do that. So can stripers, which are their cousins.
All right. And this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. So, Coach, are we ready to go on to number four?
Absolutely.
So, Coach, in Cape Cod, which is, by the way, this awesome, people think about it as a summer vacation place, but you happen to be there probably every season, and you get so much fishing time in there. What's your number four?
My number four is Western Reservoir in Harwich, which is a very, again, underfished place to go. It contains bass, pickerel, white perch, yellow perch, bluegills, catfish. I've been fishing there for over 40 years. When you look at it, There are submerged logs and stickups and lily pad fields and weed fields. It's just there's a lot of good places to go to that you can just sight fish. And as I said, it's for as good as the fishing is there, it's very, very underfished, which is a wonderful thing. It's probably, if you said to me, you have to eat today, go somewhere and catch fish, I would go to Western Reservoir because something's going to be biting on that day for sure. It's a great place.
Well, you know what? For the people that are the environmental scientists that are out there listening, you know, people, nature lovers, so let's talk so they can understand a little bit about why you're fishing certain areas. So talk about, we'll call them blowdowns or trees that have fallen in, that structure. Why would a fish be there?
Basically, because it's an ambush point. A lot of times, once again, pesce gras mangia pesce piccolo, the big ones eat the little ones, and the big fish will hang out in areas where they can burst out and ambush a bait fish or whatever else happens to be in the water. And most of these fish are very omnivorous, and they will eat anything that looks like it's alive. So they'll eat salamanders, they'll eat frogs, tadpoles, anything like that. So if you have a lure that is either weedless or you can drag over a log on the downfall to where the fish is hanging out waiting to ambush, it's like, you know, home delivery of a pizza. Like, you're bringing it to them, they're opening their mouth and hitting it. So also in the weedy areas, that tends to be a place where the bait fish will hang out. And so the bigger fish will go there, like you go to McDonald's. It's just, it's ambush and it's cover, which are not the same thing. And also the fact that when the sun is out in the middle of the day, being under something keeps the light, and fish don't have eyelids, so they need to be protected from the sun so that they can see and then, you know, go get their food.
Well, you did mention pizza, so I guess if a fish was ordering a pizza, it probably would be an anchovy pizza.
In salt water, you're correct.
That would make sense. But, and here's another thing you mentioned, and you just alluded to it a little bit with your structure cover there. With lily pads, why would a fish be under there, and how would you fish it?
Lily pads are great, and they're a blessing and a curse. There are, I'm going to say, in my experience, about four different types. The ones that are the easiest to fish and the simplest to fish and also tend to hold more fish are the big 6 to 9 inch lily pads that are have a large surface. The ones that are torture, and I don't know exactly what the name of the species is, but they're maybe the size of a quarter and they have a very long stem. And it seems like every hook, whether it's weedless or not, is going to get caught in them. The reason the fish are there is cover from sunlight, the fact that other bait fish will come there in search of smaller things, plankton, little crustaceans, whatever. And once again, the food chain goes up the line. And the way to fish them is either drag a floating lure over the top, and then when it hits a space between the lily pads and drops, it seems like there's always one there to blast it, and it's exciting because you get the surface action. The other way to do it is to poke down through the holes with a jig or something along those lines that will take, again, the lure right to where the fish happens to be.
Well, two things. That plant you're talking about that is probably not even a lily pad is a Roman shield, because if you think about, if you were to pick one of those up and sort of hold it in your hand, even though it's tiny, it would look like a Roman shield. So that's that plant we're talking about. And for me, one of the coolest things is when you're fishing lily pads is getting that weedless lure, just pulling it to the edge of where the open water is, and when it falls off and just drops down, and that's where you get that monster hit from. That's to me, it's like largemouth bass, like, you know, Nancy Nolte's pond up there and all that. You can just drop it straight down, and you know that there's a bass waiting for it at that point.
And you have to be ready for the fish to hit it on the fall, so that you don't want your lure falling on a slack line. You want there to be a straight line between the lure and your rod tip, so that if it gets hit on the fall, you can see the line move or you can feel the fish. One of the reasons I use braided line is because it doesn't stretch and it really telegraphs the most minute hit that you can get, and you can feel the fish, you can feel the structure, you can feel it going through weeds. It's very sensitive in that regard, and a graphite rod will help you in that regard as well.
And you know something, Coach, as we're speaking about this, you and I both are catch and release guys because our deal Amen. Is, you know, just letting them grow up to become big mommies and daddies. And just so it's enjoying the day, enjoying, again, you might have an Osprey overhead, and that's me with my binoculars and cameras and all that stuff. But it's just a catch and release day. So moving right along, are we going to number three right now, Coach?
Yes, we are. And we're not going very far from Western Reservoir, just up the road to Slough Pond and Brewster. This is what's neat about Slough Pond. Again, all of these have easy access and easy launching. Slough Pond is a multi-level, and you can fish in a foot of water or you can fish in 40 feet of water. Having a contour map is a big deal. Contour map shows you that when, let's say there's an increment of 5 feet, there would be a contour line that showed all around the lake or the pond, whatever it happens to be, where the 5 foot level is. And where those contour lines come together, it shows a drop off. And fishing those drop offs is typically a very good place to start. Now, without a contour map, you know, or a depth finder, you're kind of, you know, fishing blind, but there's nothing wrong with that either. You can, if you're out, and we both agree with this, that it's called fishing because you're doing that activity. We don't call it catching because you don't always catch. It's a wonderful thing to be out. It's a wonderful, you just mentioned ospreys. Sometimes they hit the water behind you and make a wicked splash, and they can, you know, they can wake you up a little bit. In any case, Slough Pond is that multi-level fishing area. The reason I like it so much is that the size of the fish is amazing. Big bass, big pickerel, big perch, big sunnies. You can fish everything from top water to mid depth to the bottom. There are sunken boats in there. And the back end of it, there's a youth camp of some kind. And I guess they must not be very good navigators because there are sunken boats all over the place, which make terrific structure and cover. Excuse me. My winter cold. Those areas are, you got to pay attention to those because bass will hang out there, pickerel will hang out there. The other thing is pickerel are always thought to be very shallow water ambush fish. And I can't tell you how many times fishing deep, which is my favorite way to fish for bass, by the way, on a jig head, I'll get a big hit and all of a sudden it's, you know, a snake, which is my nickname for pickerel because they kind of look like snakes. But they're everywhere and they're fierce predators. They will fight you like they hate you from the old neighborhood. Terrific fish. I love them. So Slough Pond definitely is a place to go.
Wasn't that the place that John Crane, his dad, you and I went to one of those times we were up there?
Absolutely. Yep.
And that was, as you described that, because I fished many of these places that you're speaking about, and you described the camp across there, and I remember going across there with an ultralight rod, and it was like, and this is early spring where it was cool water, and it was like pickerel haven up there. Mm-hmm. I was just as happy as could be before you mentioned about structure, and I would go near some structure or sometimes even into real shallow water. Again, that's the water because fish are going to go toward water that's warming up, and the beachy areas that will warm up quicker, you'll see fish early spring navigating to those areas. And I was just having a blast that day catching a pickerel, releasing them, and catching another one. And you know what's really neat? Sometimes I was catching a pickerel that was like tiny little guys that were the size of the lure. And because this species is so ravenous, they'll eat something the same size as them. Really neat. And tell you a real quick story. I was up at a hatchery one time, and they were raising northern pike. And the northern pike, you're talking about a fish that's 2 inches big in a tank, will look head on at another northern pike and swallow it whole, and you just see a tail sticking out. So think about someone who's the exact same size as you and just swallowing them. And in this line of species, they are just ravenous, ravenous eaters. I just thought I'd throw that in there because it sounded cool.
Well, Rutz Hutch just invented a 5'9" hot dog, so I may go and see if I can be a chain pickerel today and see if we're going to eat the whole hot dog.
That'll work. Now, let's move on to your number two. What do you got, Coach?
Okay, interesting that you said this before. Cape Cod is known as a vacation place, and most people, when they think of Cape Cod, think about saltwater fishing, and my first four have been freshwater, except for the one that was brackish. My number two is Long Pond in Yarmouth. This is another one that I've been fishing for quite a while. This is another multi-level. Actually, it's the pond is kind of, when you call it a pond, everything is a pond up there. They almost call anything a lake. This one is pretty big. I'm going to say it's about over 60 acres. And the I guess it's the south end, is pond-like in terms of being A, shallow, B, very weedy, C, quite a bit of it, like it's a sandy bottom, but then there is that mossy look covering over that, which is very kettle pondish. Most of the ponds up there were created as the glaciers came through, and the rocks that were being pushed by the glaciers, boulders as it were gouging out holes, and then when the glaciers melted, they became ponds, and most of those are called, they call them kettle ponds or kettle hole ponds, and Long Pond is one of those. Big fish in there, again, big pickerel, big perch, big bass. You can fish anywhere from 2 to 30 feet. The structure is terrific. There are 2 or 3 access points. Again, very underfished. The homes around it are gorgeous. And you can, if you could go there and just kayak if you wanted to, it's that big. So it's a great place to go. Lots of fun. And the only issue is on windy days, if the wind is coming down the center of it, there's almost nowhere that's protected. But if the wind is coming across, you will get an entire side. Wind is a big factor. It's my least favorite of the, things that you can deal with as a fisherman. I mean, I'll fish in rain before I'll fish in wind. But you can find a place that's sheltered. So a good place to go.
You know, and as you're describing all this, and you mentioned something a few minutes ago about it is Cape Cod, besides, you know, the fisherman's haven, is a family adventure. And one of the things, because one of your favorite activities, if you're not with a fishing rod and a kayak, is on the bike. Talk about the biking up there at Cape Cod.
Well, when I go, it's with the exception of 1 week in the summer, I'm there in the off season. And the traffic is down to virtually nothing. So biking on roads is vastly simpler than it is up here in the New York metropolitan area and safer. But what they do have is the Cape Cod Rail Trail, the Old Colony Rail Trail, which are rights of way that railroads used to go on that they've made bike paths. And they go all over the Cape, and they are terrific because they maintain them well. They're smooth. You can go on them with a road bike. They also have off-road, rougher ones that you can go on. What I love to do is do a house tour. And I'll just drive on a main road. I should say bike on a main road. And I just make a turn on a street that looks like there's some cool houses on it. And I actually have taken a lot of pictures. Most of the homes up there are unique. It's not like seeing a development of 87 split levels. You don't see that. But it's very unique. The wonderful thing about Cape Cod is every 5 miles, there's a place to stop and get a coffee, which I'm the happiest guy in the world.
Hey, if you could find coffee, think about this. I'd say, let's rank this. Fish, coffee, kayak. I don't know if that's the right
Boom.
Order.
Boom.
But I know you're set on that one. And as you mentioned about the different homes up there, and you and I, again, have seen this, you get off on a side street somewhere, and they're just like... One is so unique. You look, you go, wow, that's the coolest house. And you pedal down the street and 5 houses later you go, that is the coolest house. It really just is a unique place. Hey, people vacation, but obviously a lot of people love to live there, you know, year round as well.
I'm still waiting for somebody to come out of their house waving the deed and saying, here, coach, it's all yours. Take it. But it hasn't happened yet.
I guess you got to continue on the biking path then.
Yeah, I guess.
That's the trail. So we don't have a drum roll here. No one's in the studio with the drum. All right, we do have one. So, Coach, what is your number one fishing place up at Cape Cod?
Okay, now I don't know if this is cheating or not, but I'm going to call this the trifecta salt ponds. Follins Pond, Dinah's Pond, and Kelly's Bay are 3 areas of the northern terminus of the Bass River system. You can fish all 3 of them, and they are connected in 1 day, so I'm considering them to be... one fishing destination. They are loaded with salt water. It's a salt pond system. Schoolie bass, striped bass, stripers, porgies, bluefish, fluke, all in the same area. What you're going to catch more than anything else And the reason I catch more than it is that's specifically what I'm fishing for, are schoolie striped bass. A schoolie is anything from the smallest one you've ever seen up to about 24 inches. A keeper starts at 28, and though I don't keep them, I could keep bass that are 28, and you keep two a day. Hopefully they're going to change that rule to where you can only keep one, or they're going to go to a slot limit. And the best thing that could happen for the fishery would be for striped bass to be designated a game fish so that they couldn't be caught commercially in nets, because the population is in a little bit of trouble. Not like it was back in the 80s when there was a moratorium and it was almost an impossibility to catch a striped bass. But getting back to this area, salt water, it comes directly up from the Nantucket Sound. It's the top end of Bass River, which is about 10 miles long. There's moving water in there. There's different depths. A ton of little, it looked like silver sides, which are small bait fish. And anything that you have from 2 inches up to 6 inches that you can make look like a bait fish is going to get belted. Top water, mid water, deep water. Typically what we'll do is we'll troll a swim bait that has a tail on it that looks like the bait is swimming. And then when we troll a fish up, we'll stop and fish that area, and you can cover miles in a day. I do a fundraiser up there, and I do 6 hours in the boat, and typically we'll cover, I don't know, like, you know, 10 miles in that 6 hours trolling up fish and just paddling. So great, great, great place to go. And if you're a rookie and you want to learn how to catch bass, there's almost never any wind. There's almost never any waves. And so it's a great place to learn to kayak. You can get out in certain areas and fish, you know, standing up and beach your boat, and it's no problem. Again, beautiful homes around the edge. Definitely my number one. Now, I'm going to sneak this one in too. My 1A is Barnstable Harbor, because that's where I go with my fishing guide, Steve Keene, which is striper, bluefish. And the neatest thing is we always go out before it's light, and almost always there are those little bioluminescent guys.
Oh, awesome.
And it's like fireflies in the water. And when you catch a fish in that, the movement that the fish is making causes those biolumes to go off, and you're getting a fireworks show around the fish that you're catching. Just amazing. As the boat is cutting the water, they're flowing off to the right and the left of the boat. When your paddle goes in and you pull back in the wake of the paddle, they're flashing. It's a magical, magical place.
Let me just talk about that for a second, then you can go back to Steve Keene, because I have some great, cool Steve Keene stories as well. Bioluminescence are microorganisms, and they chemically take the heat from another organism, and they actually glow. And one of the coolest things I ever did was, well, my cousin Mike was doing his doctorate up at MIT, and we went out into a little bay, and Michael said, you got to do this, and we're just picking up the water, and you're holding it in your hands, and it's glowing green from the heat, and you just throw it into the air, and all of a sudden it's green, and then just disappears, because the heat is leaving the organism at that point in time. And as you're saying that, Coach, that, like, when you talk about, like, some of the cooler things that you could see in life, because, again, we love to fish, but it's like when you see it and you're in that moment, that is just, like, one of the neatest things that is going on in your life. Really, it's just really cool.
And it never fails, and I'm going to say every single time I go out with Steve, which is anywhere from 2 to 3 times a year, and we've become great, great friends, we'll be out, we're dragging a swim bait, hoping for that first, you know, hit. And I'll say to him, what percentage of the population on this earth has ever done what we're doing now? And it's got to be less than 1% to be in a kayak out on the water at that time of day, catching fish, having camaraderie with that guy, being in a gorgeous, you know, piece of God's creation. And then when you look at on a moon tide, either a full moon or a new moon, the difference in low tide and high tide could be 15 feet of water. It's just incredible to see that and to feel the strength of the current and the strength of the tide. And if the current on a channel is going in the same direction as the tide is going, which is always the case, you can fly through there. And if you have to go against it, you're in for a workout. You get wind in the same direction as the current and you have to go against it, It's almost like get on a sandbar and wait for it to change. It's like really, really strong.
And when you talk about new moon, full moon, the percentage of water being pulled is 20% higher. And you talk about 20% of the ocean's top there. That's a great amount of water. Now, I'm going to throw this one, and I'm guessing you have the answer. Steve Keen, great man, great fishing guide. What is his number one rule?
Number one rule is don't leave fish to find fish. If you're on fish and you look up and see, that's the other great thing about kayak fishing and just being able to move in the water rather than fishing from shore is you'll see birds working or fish working the surface, and it's so tempting to go, let's go get the striper poppers out and fish, you know, up in the water column rather than what we're doing right now. And Steve's, although he has broken this rule, is don't leave the fish you're on to go find fish somewhere else. If there's small fish, enjoy them. I have zero problem with small fish, but that is his absolute number one rule.
And you know, it's funny, you're saying small fish, and if you're catching a schoolie that's 20 inches, and I'm going back to the white perch, but it's the white perch times 10, it's like that fish has never eaten before in the history of the world, and when he hits, and your rod bends, and you're like, holy moly, and then when the fight begins, and you're going, it's only a 20-inch fish, because you're going to catch 28s and 30s, and that is a great battle with that. Now, Steve Keen,
and let me just say this. It's amazing how sometimes you'll catch a much larger fish than you think based on the fight you're getting. And you go, wow, I never thought it was that big. And then on the other end of that is you'll catch a 15-inch fish and you thought it was a 30. Because they're just, some of them are just in a bad mood. And sometimes they'll use the current to their advantage. And sometimes they're just better fighters. There's a school of thought that says that a 35-inch fish will do a better job of fighting you than a 50-inch fish because they are in a different stage of their lifespan. And the bigger ones will not wiggle as hard, but they know that their weight is greater and they can just hang out. It's like when you watch a tug of war and the big guy at the end is just holding his ground. That's kind of like what the big guys do at the end of your line.
Now, another thing is, and I remember we were out one time with Steve Keen and we kayaked to an area. We got out and we're standing in waist deep water. It was summertime. And this is the cool piece of nature. I'm fishing along. I'm probably in waist deep water. And all of a sudden, a head pops out of the water next to me, and it's a harbor seal. So you got this guy who's like 300-400 pounds, and he just like pops up, looks at you like, hey, I'm here, and just bounces back down, and you see him swim off. And it's like, hey, did I want to catch fish that day? Absolutely. But when that just happened to me, you know, environmental science guy, it's like I'm just in love with what just happened that moment. Really cool.
Well, there's a major seal problem at the Cape right now. They've not done anything to control the seal population. There used to be a hunt. They're talking about possibly now doing a sterilization program. But the number of seals up there has skyrocketed to the point where now there are resident great white sharks at the Cape who never go away because the seals are there. And even their presence has not knocked it down. The seals' effect on the population of stripers and blues is going to be felt very, very soon. And the biggest issue is, and here's my guess, and there have been people that have bitten by sharks, until someone is actually killed, they're not going to go into action. And they really need to do something about that seal population because it's a major problem, major problem.
Well, and this is always a big part of nature. We wait and want to be reactionary to something instead of being proactive before. And those are decisions, again, we've got to make, and we've got to make for the health of the human population. And then obviously, here's food chain. You control the seal population of some sorts, whatever is the best humane way. And when that happens, then the striped bass population continues to grow. You've been fishing this area for quite a number of years, Coach. And if I was going to say there's an expert on the area and a person that was going to take me and guide me to a place, it is definitely you.
Well, you know what? Thank you for that, Joey. And Steve has actually said to me, you could guide up here. And not that I would want to, but I could guide the salt ponds and I could guide the freshwater ponds. I wouldn't feel the same about doing any big salt water. And once again, if you want to be a better fisherman, get out and fish. Reading will certainly up your knowledge, but it's kind of like if I tell you how to block a three technique in football and I don't give you any reps at it, you're not going to be any good at it. You have to actually get out. And my my lifetime striper count now is at 3,257. And I wouldn't have that number. And I don't know if that's a good or a bad number. It's better than anybody I know except for Steve. But I've been out. I mean, I go up there for, you know, 5 weeks at a time in the springtime, fish every day. I work 41 years to be able to do that, so I'm a happy guy. And the place that I stay at is a great... So it's just, it's a wonderland, and I have the great opportunity to do that. But the point I was making is you have to get out and fish to be good at fishing. You get good at what you get reps at. Now, I know that's not the best grammar in the world, but...
But again, I'm going to cut you... I got to cut you short because your saying is, and it's a lot about life, is what you get reps at is what you get good at, and you've used that often. And again, by the way, I have stolen that from you when I'm speaking in front of groups, specifically kids.
I'm keeping score, by the way.
All right, good. Well, and you always do, and most times you're up on that score, but I want you to know that that is so important because it doesn't matter what you're doing in life. If you can get reps in at that, you're going to become more proficient in it. So your point is, hey, it's great to read the book, but there's nothing greater than being out there without the book, doing whatever that outdoor activity is. And Coach, being in the outdoors is wonderful. Your Cape Cod type top five is a spectacular thing. And for those of you that just want to kayak and get out there and see nature, so if you just listen to what Coach was speaking about in his top five and you just paddled out there, or if you're a birder, because Coach, you know this, there are so many different bird species up there. If you just want to get out and bird, whether it's via kayak or just go out from the shore, those are five great places to be.
And for those of you that are, and we just threw around the word reps, that's short for repetitions, in case you didn't know that. And what Joey B just said is it is a great place. Cape Cod is a great place to go. But I don't want you to spend a lot of time telling people about these five places because then they will become overfished and then I won't be happy.
Yes. If you see Coach, your job is to paddle in the opposite direction.
Thank you.
And Coach, I just want to thank you for coming into the studio today and sharing your experiences and your education and knowledge with us.
Oh, I appreciate that. And here's an idea for another show, Fishing Etiquette.
Coach, I will get you back in the studio on that one. Until next time, enjoy life's adventures. You can follow all of my adventures online at joeybee.tv. That's joeybee.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.